We are so blessed to have Sean McDowell with us this morning. And I don't see him. Where is he? Is he coming from back? There he is. Welcome, Sean McDowell. It's great to have you, man.
Check, are we on? Excellent. All right, good morning. You guys ready to rock and roll for the day? You got your iPads or your notebooks to take some notes? Because we're going to go a little bit deeper and a little further than you're probably used to going in your typical youth event. All right, my name is Sean McDowell. I actually live in Southern California. I'm a full-time high school teacher, so I work with students every day. I actually came with, I'm having a daddy-daughter weekend. My daughter, Shauna, is in the back. She's already made some friends, so you can't see her. She's off with some guy. No, I'm just kidding. Made some friends her age. She's only six. And she actually said to me a couple summers ago, we're sitting there, and she looked at me and she said, "Dad, I love you more than pancakes." I thought, oh my goodness, I can just die and go to heaven because pancakes are a big deal. I have another son who's 9 years old, and he finally got to watch The Avengers. You know, like, he's nine. Okay, you can watch The Avengers. And now every day he wakes up, he's like, "Dad, let's watch The Avengers. Dad, let's watch The Avengers." I'm like, I've created a monster. And then I have a son who's 9 months old, and just, I should have thrown it on the video, but just yesterday for the first time, when we go off to school, we wave, and we're like, bye, Shane, and he waves his hand, and he waved at me. Okay, this is cool. At least the girls got it. Like, the guys are like, who cares? It's cool when you're a dad, okay? And then I actually, I've been married to my high school sweetheart for 13 years. At least the girls appreciate that. All right, I'm feeling the love. I grew up in a small town in the mountains of San Diego called Julian. And it was an old mine town, and it was famous for apple pies. And in third grade, I was on the bus, and my best friend at the time named Jesse Nichols had a crush on a girl named Stephanie. And Jesse asked me to sit by this girl, Stephanie, and see if she thought that he was cute. So I remember sitting by this girl, Stephanie, who actually now is my wife. And I asked her if she thought my friend Jesse was cute, and I don't remember what she said. I didn't know she was going to be my wife. But it might explain why my favorite song is the 80s song, Jesse's Girl. You saw it coming. All right, we're going to dive in. There's a clock. That's huge. Perfect. I can see what time it is. That's excellent. Tell you what we're going to do this first session. And, oh, man, will you do me a favor? There should be a jacket right out there on my bag. Will someone grab that for me? I'm not going to give you a lecture during this first session. I'm not going to give you notes to write down. Because see, what we're going to do is you see coming down the aisle right now is what I call my atheist jacket. That means when this jacket goes on, my worldview transforms into an atheist. Thank you, Tony. Good man. I don't care what they say about you. You're a nice guy. When this jacket comes on, my worldview for this first session is going to become an atheist. And what I'm going to try to do is as persuasively as possible, present the atheist worldview, invite questions or challenges from you, and then respond as an atheist might, and we'll see how well you do. So it'll be one against 150, or however many there are here. Leaders are welcome to join in, okay? So you guys ready for this? Now, this microphone can get passed around, is that right? Gave me the thumbs up. Would you like to do this? You look fast, you know, a little guy like me, you're quick. All right, you're awesome. Thank you, Terry. I don't know if that maybe turned on. Now give me, it'll be just a minute before you do it. Now here's the deal. Here's how I want you to do this.
Test.
Oh, excellent, it works. Now, by the way, if someone comes in late, can you tell them what we're doing? You can see the shock on people's faces, like, what the heck is happening in this Bible day where we're supposed to learn truth. I went to Biola University in Southern California, and we would have chapels, and there'd be like 2,000 or 3,000 students there. And one time we had a guy come in, he was a Christian missionary to Muslims, and he dressed up like a Muslim. And he was giving a speech that a Muslim would give and then invited students from the chapel to come ask questions, and he responded as a Muslim. Well, this student comes in late and didn't know what was going on. So in the back of the whole chapel, in front of the entire student body, he shouts out at the top of his lungs. He says, "This is the house of Allah. This is not the house of Allah." I'm sorry, that would be even worse. He said, "This is not the house of Allah. This is the house of the one true living God." He said it like that, expecting everyone to cheer, and it was like awkward silence. He didn't get the memo, okay? So sometimes I'll have people stand back there, and they'll look at me, and they'll start doing this number, like getting upset. Okay, so just tell them, all right? We're role-playing, and then we're going to step out of this role-play, and then the rest of the day, I want to make this as worth your time as possible. Okay, I hope, I don't know why all of you are here. Maybe it's a free food, maybe it's a worship. Maybe there's nothing else to do here in El Paso. I'm not sure. That was like a nervous laughter, like, yeah, he's on to us, okay? But I'll tell you why I'm here. I'm here with my daughter. We're having a fun weekend, but I love students. I believe every single one of you, God has made you special in his image, has a plan for your life. But you live in a world in which Christianity and your faith will be under more attack than any generation that has ever lived in America. And you better be prepared to understand why you believe what you believe. And I want to make today count. Okay, so we're going to have fun, but I have a sense of urgency that for many of you, your faith in a sense is on the line. When it's all said and done, I want you to walk out of here more confident than you've ever been. Okay, but before we do that, I'm going to have to break you down a little bit. So when this goes on, I'm going to be an atheist. By the way, with the questions, this is not a time to stand up and give this long, drawn-out speech. Ask your question as quickly as you can. If it's helpful and necessary, I'll let you follow up. I don't want a filibuster, okay? I'll let you follow up as many times as is necessary, and then we'll move on to someone else. But just keep in mind that we'd like to allow as many people to ask questions as possible, okay? So when I put this on, I'll take 3 or 4 minutes and just kind of like tell you my story. This is actually an atheist friend of mine. So I kind of tell you that story, introduce myself, and then we will launch into the role play. And then I'll take questions, okay? All right. I guess if I stop here, I'm an agnostic. All right, make sure we're on here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for inviting me to your event. This is very unusual for me to get invited to a Christian event. Now, this is a student event, right? And everyone here is a Christian, is that right? Okay. Now, I could ask what that means to be a Christian, because there's so many denominations and so many different people that call themselves Christians. Christians can hardly agree on anything, but I'll just assume you call yourself a follower of Christ. Thanks for inviting me. I get invited to public events, secular humanist events to speak, adult events, but rarely do I get invited to speak to Christians. And I've wondered about this, and maybe it's because atheists are kind of the enemy. We're destroying the country. We took prayer out of schools. We're redefining marriage. So why bring the enemy in and listen to the enemy? Maybe that's it. Maybe it's because we all know that religion is a matter of faith, which is believing something when there's no evidence, or even believing something against the evidence. Well, I don't have that kind of faith. I am a person who believes in science and reason and evidence. So today, if you could provide evidence that God exists, or that the Bible is actually true, or Jesus rose from the grave, I would believe. I would want to believe these stories. But my problem is I've just never seen any good evidence to think these things are actually true. So both you and I recognize that the evidence is not there. You have faith. I just can't have faith unless I think it's actually true. Okay, I'm a man of reason and a man of science. So I actually grew up in a Christian home, went to a Southern Baptist church, and I would go on youth. How many of you have been on some kind of mission trip? Let me see your hands. Okay, good. I went on a mission trip like that. I went to a youth group. I didn't go to conferences exactly like this, but Christian conferences and camps. Read my Bible. I believed it. And then about 15, 16 years old, I started having a conversation with a friend of mine who is an atheist. And she asked me some questions I had never heard before. And I was about to respond back as my youth pastor would. I was about to respond back as my parents taught me to. And for the first time in my life, I thought, you know what? I'm going to actually look into and see what is true. To make a long story short, I started reading books on the other side. I started watching YouTube videos on the other side. And I began to realize that my faith was not on a good foundation. And then if I was honest with myself, there's no good scientific evidence to believe that God even exists. There's far too many errors and contradictions and mistakes in the Bible for it to be the word of God, let alone an accurate historical document. And there's certainly no reason to think that Jesus rose from the grave. So I became an atheist, and I walked away from my faith. And to be honest with you, it was one of the most freeing things I've ever done. It was tough, but it was one of the most freeing things to actually make decisions, not because some God is going to judge me and I'm guilted into it, but because I think certain things are good and certain things are true. Instead of living for some heaven in the afterlife, I can actually take advantage and value this life I'm in most while I'm actually here. So I guess we'll look at it like this, and then I'll take some questions. How many of you have studied, just by a show of hands so I know, the Greco-Roman gods in English or history class, Zeus and Poseidon and all these? Okay, all right, good. Now, when they couldn't explain something like earthquakes, what did they say was the cause? The gods are angry, right? Or they couldn't explain rain, they said what? The gods are crying. No, gods don't cry. The goddesses were crying, okay? But I want you to notice the thinking is very important. They were presented with a natural phenomena like earthquakes or rain, and they didn't understand like the hydrological cycle, plate tectonics, so they inserted God into something they couldn't explain naturally. But as science has progressed, guess what's happened? All these things that we used to say, oh, God did that, oh, we need God for this, oh, God caused that, we find these natural explanations for it. Now, we haven't found everything about the universe, obviously, but the more we find, the smaller the gap becomes actually for God. So look, I'm really not here to take your faith away from you. If believing in God gives you community, if it gives you a purpose, if it gives you something to live for, I have no problem with that. My grandmother likes to knit, right? I don't want to take knitting away from her. It gives her community. She spends her time doing it. It's fun. My problem is when people say they think it's true, and then they want to force their morals upon the rest of us when there's no good evidence that their faith is actually true. So, what questions would you like to have for an atheist? You might come around, if you raise your hand up, we're going to do this quickly to get as many people as possible. So you're going to have to be fast. You look like a former point guard or something. All right? So move fast, raise your hand up, and he's going to move to you more quickly than that.
You're an atheist, okay? And you believe in the scientific facts and evidence. How is air made?
Well, it's an interesting question. I don't think air was made, because even the question kind of betrays this intelligence that made it. I don't think there was a mind behind it at all. I think we actually see atmospheres in many different planets, and in our planet, there happens to be the kind of atmosphere of which organisms have evolved to use as a source for respiration. If our atmosphere was different, I think we would have evolved differently. I just started, man. All right. Get your hand. That, Tyler, now you're killing it, Terry.
Who gave us our conscience?
Well, this is an interesting question because notice he said, who made air or what made air? Who gave us our conscience? The question is betraying that you're assuming that conscience. Do you mean moral conscience or do you mean consciousness? Oh, moral conscience. When you say who gave it to us, obviously I don't believe there's a person that gave it to us, right? Because then there would need some kind of God. I think our conscience is the result of an evolutionary process. Pascal Boyer wrote a book called Religion Explained, The Evolutionary Origins of Religious Thought. And he walks through how actually there's a survival advantage to having a moral conscience. So organisms and societies that don't understand right and wrong will wipe each other out and not survive. Those with a moral conscience will be able to survive and pass on their values to the next generation. So I don't think anyone gave it to us. You and I both agree we have a conscience and there's right and wrong. We just disagree about the source, I think, is where it would come down to. So if we can agree on right and wrong, why do we even need the source? What's the point? Especially when the source, like the Bible, has so many just clearly immoral teachings, like slavery and misogyny and genocide and stuff like that. Go ahead.
The evidence for which I carry would be organization in the universe, how the solar system works, organization in our body, the wonder of our body, how we can take our cells and go from LA to New York and back 5 times and fit it in this body. I mean, God's full of wonders. How do you explain the wonders of the universe and the organization that he put the solar system in, the earth in, how the earth works, and how our body works?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's a clear, all of your questions are kind of betraying this assumption, like God has to do it. Now explain how God didn't do it, right? I've noticed that in the 3 questions. I do think the universe is amazing. I look at it and I'm in awe of the universe. It's incredible. In fact, there's many atheists who have a spiritual sense when they look at the universe that they connect with something that's bigger and greater and beyond themselves. Now, if we just state it the way you did on the surface, these things go, oh yeah, there must be God, it's incredible. But Richard Dawkins, who was just voted by a British newspaper last week as the leading or one of the leading intellectuals in the world, he wrote a book called Climbing Mount Improbable. And he was talking about the evolutionary process on its surface. Things look very impossible, but if you go around the backside in a step-by-step manner, you can actually get more complex things through a very simple process. So I don't look at the universe as having to be the handiwork of God. In fact, if you look at our planet, and if only our planet existed, then we might say, boy, this had to be designed. But you know, in our galaxy, there's at least 100 billion stars like our sun, and there's at least 100 billion, not million, billion stars. A couple of you got that. Billion stars. I'm sorry, 100 billion galaxies that each would have an estimate of 100 billion stars within them. Now, as we look out in the universe, most of those are not fit for life. Most of those cannot support life. But on Earth, there is. That tells me there's so many probabilistic resources out there. Eventually, you're going to get it right in one place or the other. So I don't see any reason why there has to be a God for there to be wonders in the universe, because it's so big and it's so old and there's so many natural laws and chance that can result in many things like what we see. And if they want to follow back, I want to allow them to respond. If it's necessary, okay? Allow them to come back and then target your next question. Go ahead.
So the question is, I hear you talk about like evolution and that. So the question stands, how do we have homosexuality knowing that and some aspects of evolution, it's survival of the fittest. So you have a breed of people that cannot reproduce, but yet it's been around since the beginning of time. Since man fell and since entering into the world, it's been. And you can't reproduce, and yet it's still here.
Good question. 2 things. Number one, I don't believe that man fell. I don't believe in original sin. That's kind of what you're indicating. That's going to raise a lot of thorny questions for you, because everybody else is born guilty already because of something that a man at least 6, 10+ thousand years ago did. So there's reasons why I don't believe in the original fall. Here's the thing about evolution. Evolution is not a perfect process. It's not a designed process. It's a very powerful directed process, but it's clumsy. So we have things like molars that are left over. We have things like the appendix that is left over. We have the coccyx in our back, and I have a sore back because it used to be our ancestors would have tails that come from the back, but they don't anymore. So it's imperfect. So it's left over from an era when those had a purpose, even though they don't serve it today. So when it comes to homosexuality, I've never said that there's a specific gene that causes it. One of the things we're learning about genetics is that genes have certain proclivities, but our choices, our environment, our diet determines whether those genes are actually activated or not. So this gene could be passed on by many people. It could skip a generation. It could be activated in some cases and not activated in others, and easily continue to exist as maybe a mutation from the norm as a part of the evolutionary process. So I don't know any evolutionist who would say that homosexuality has to get weeded out any more than, hey, redheads, there's only one out of 16 people are redheads. There you are, right? Why don't red? Blonde? You're blonde?
But I
it's kind of strong. Oh, you dyed it. Oh, cool. It's pretty. My son has kind of this strawberry blonde hair. It's really cute. He's like 9 months. Anyways, so one out of 16 people have redheads. Why isn't that weeded out? Well, it just continues as a minority within the process. I think the same is true with homosexuality. By the way, homosexuals can reproduce. Many of them just choose not to, right? I mean, they can. In fact, many of them will do artificial insemination and still actually reproduce. So that's one way genes can get passed on. I want to make sure if people want to follow up, if they give you the nod, like it's really important. You don't have to, but.
So at the beginning, you asked us to prove to you that God exists, right?
I just want some evidence to think he's actually there.
All right. What is your definition of evidence? I mean, do you have to see it, feel it, touch it? Do you have to have some kind of scientific spiel to explain that it really is real? What is your idea of evidence?
You know, that's a good question. Good for you. Actually, I'm going to take my jacket off for a second. Very good question. Okay? Instead of jumping in and like going after me, let's define some terms. Where are you coming from? What's your criteria? Good question. I am not an empiricist. Someone who's an empiricist is someone who believes that you can only know things you can touch, taste, see, or feel. Okay? So I'm not one who believes that. I'm not one who believes that only the scientific method can deliver truth. But what I do believe is science has shown itself by far to be the most reliable key of understanding the universe. Excuse me. So science has given us things like transportation and information and a technology revolution. Science has radically transformed the world in the past century. So I would like science to give some reason to think that God exists. Whatever that looks like. How do we know this world was made by God? But I would also accept the philosophical argument. If you could show me premises in an argument that requires God exists and it's compelling, that would be fine. If you could give me historical evidence that these miracles really happened, if I could have eyewitness testimony that couldn't be explained another way, I would accept it. And you know what would compel me? Look, if even just some of the things in the Bible happened, I'd believe it. Look at what Elijah, and then let me say one thing, and then you come back. Look what happened to Elijah. You guys remember the story of Elijah in 1 Kings 19? You remember this story? The prophet? The prophets of Baal, they're talking trash. And he says, all right, we'll have a showdown. We'll have two sacrifices. And it says everyone in the area came out. And the Baal prophets called to their God, nothing happened. Elijah calls his God, fire comes down. Hey, I'm free at lunch. If any of you want to go out there and call upon your God, and if fire comes down, I'll convert on the spot. I've done it before and it just never happens. God is silent.
See, you're not exactly being fair though, because you're asking for eyewitnesses. Nobody was there when the world evolved. And if they were, they're dead now. All you're showing me is a list of scientific facts that prove that what it is now started from somewhere. You're not saying that scientific method and all that. Maybe God used evolution. Maybe he looked at the whatever enzyme thing and said, grow into a person. You're not proving that
okay.
He doesn't exist. You're only proving that the method that you found is the one that how it was made.
Okay, three things. First off, it's not my burden of proof to prove that God doesn't exist. Right? You're the one who's saying God does exist, so the burden of proof is upon you. right? If God exists, give me some reason to think that he's out there. It's not my job. An atheist is just someone who doesn't believe in God, and there's a lack of evidence. I don't have to disprove him to not believe in him. I'd like some positive evidence that he exists. So the burden of proof is upon you. Second, I did say eyewitness events, but I'm not talking about scientific eyewitness events. I'm talking about historical events, eyewitnesses, that are reliable and not contradictory of the things say about Jesus. You know, because we have other alleged events about Joseph Smith and about the Quran. So these kind of cancel each other out. Science deals with historical events. Geologists study events from the past. Evolutionists study events from the past. Astronomers study events from the past. So of which we're not eyewitnesses for, but we have remains in the present that are best explained through certain natural processes. So I'm not saying the only way you can know anything is by being an eyewitness event. But what I'm saying is I would like the means of which science normally operates to give me some reason to think that there's a God, or historical evidence, or philosophical evidence. I'm pretty open mind here. Or a miracle would be nice too.
So you're an atheist and you believe in science. So what makes your belief better than people that are like us, are Christians and believe in the Bible, or Muslims that believe in the Quran? What makes yours like better or the one to believe in?
Okay, that's fair. Can I ask you a question? What makes your beliefs better than Muslims? Just so I know where you're coming from. Because do you believe Islam is true?
No.
Do you believe the Quran is the word of God?
No.
So what makes your belief better than their belief?
It doesn't. What they believe, but I was just wondering why you think that there's nothing.
Okay, hang on. I promise I'm not avoiding your question. I will come back and answer it. Did you just say that your belief is not any better than a Muslim's belief?
No, they're your beliefs, I guess. Like, whatever you think is true, that's what you think is true. But why do you believe?
But sure, but slow down. You think your beliefs are true.
Yes.
A Muslim thinks their beliefs are true.
Yes.
Are you saying they're both true? Or are you saying neither is true? What exactly are you saying?
I believe that mine is true, but if you were to go to a person just like me that is Muslim, they would say that theirs is true.
That's right. So what makes yours actually true?
My faith.
Your faith does. So you have faith in it.
Yes.
Okay. So if it all comes down to faith, then you can't say any belief system is better than any other system, right?
Right.
You can't say that my belief system is better. You can't say that my belief system is worse. You can't say that Islam is better. You can't say Mormonism is better or worse. All beliefs, if it's a matter of faith, become equal then. See, that's not enough for me. I actually think our beliefs should be rooted in what is true and where the evidence is. So if you could show me that Christianity was true, that Jesus really lived and died on the cross, that he actually did miracles, that the Bible is true, that God exists, then I would believe it and be a Christian. But I don't see any good reason to see those things are true. And I see a power in science explaining the world naturally. So why should I believe in God? I mean, you said earlier God could have used evolution. Look, God could have used evolution. So if God could have used evolution, then why add God to the mix, right? If evolution explains it and you want to add God, that's fine. But then you're just adding something on top for which there's no good reason to believe.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know it was on. So you were talking about like different areas of science and stuff? Oh, I'm sorry.
Hold it up close.
Can you hear it? Can you hear me? Okay. Well, I just wanted to talk because you mentioned geology.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to like carbon dating and stuff, like things that happened in Mount St. Helens, they were able to create rocks that if you looked at them using like geological principles, they could have been like, if you looked at it, it would have been said that it was dated like hundreds of millions of years ago, but really they were made like instantly because all you really need is like the right conditions. So like, I guess in like different areas of science, like with these flaws and things, like how do you place your faith in that?
Okay. Couple things. First off, I never mentioned anything about carbon dating.
Well, you said,
which is interesting.
You said things about like in areas of science. So that's what I mean.
Well, look, most scientists don't use carbon dating as their prime form of dating. There's a host of different forms of dating. Carbon dating possibly for living things within mostly recent times, but not for a long time. I mean, most people would look at astronomy and they'd say, look, we're looking at stars based upon the speed of light. Do you know when we look out at stars, what are we looking at? We're not looking at the star. We're looking at light that was sent hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years ago, because of how far it takes to get to us. So you know what that means? That means if the earth is only like 10,000 years old, like you're implying, then God put stars in the sky. God made the universe look as if there were stars, and yet those stars never even actually existed. God's like set up a world that deceives us about what we study as being true. So that's one reason why scientists, when they date the universe, they don't just use carbon dating. They'll use physics, they'll use astronomy, they'll use geology, primarily radiocarbon dating. So I wouldn't appeal to something like carbon dating even to make my case. Good question, though.
Do you believe in the Big Bang Theory?
Okay, who is that? Because if that's God, oh, there you are, okay. See, that's always what happens. You hear a voice, you go, oh my gosh, God is speaking to me, and then you find a natural explanation for it. So, I didn't hear your question, I'm sorry.
Do you believe in the Big Bang Theory?
I do believe in the Big Bang Theory, yeah.
So, according to physics, if matter isn't created or destroyed, how come we're here?
Okay, time out. You realize what you just said? You said according to physics.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, matter is neither created nor destroyed. Which one of us believes that matter was created?
Us?
Yeah, I think you're right. Us meaning you Christians believe that. I don't believe matter was created.
But according to the Big Bang Theory, there was an explosion and we're just here.
Well,
so that's created matter.
That's a little bit different. See, here's what we know. We know that as you go back in time towards what looks as the beginning to us, what has been dubbed the Big Bang, time and matter and space coalesce into something that's called a singularity. The problem is about 10 to the negative 43rd second, like the slight moment after what's been called the Big Bang, all the laws of physics and all things as nature as we know them break down. It's called Planck's time. We do not have the technology or the ability to peer into those initial moments. It's simply a matter of guessing. So Stephen Hawking might be right that the beginning of time is actually, there's a sense of a curve where there's not one definite moment, although time itself, he would say, still began. It could be that Lawrence Krauss is right, a physicist who actually argues that something can come from nothing. And he gives examples from quantum physics to back that up. So I think as we peer towards the initial moments of the universe, there's a lot of questions and a lot of debates about exactly what happened. And I think it's very plausible that something did come from nothing. And I could actually defend that if you're interested in hearing how that's the case. I don't know how interested you are. But we know God didn't create it because, number one, you mentioned the first law of thermodynamics, which is matter's neither created or destroyed. So you can't have a creator to bring it into existence. But second, if you said God made the universe, then you have the problem of who made God? Where did God come from? Right? I mean, that only pushes the problem back one level and doesn't really answer it. So what theology does is says, oh, we can't explain it. Let's say God is there. And scientists say, okay, wait a minute. Let's study this. Let's make some progress and see if there's an explanation. And fortunately, throughout the history of the world, scientists have pushed back on religious opposition and continued to seek truth regardless of the persecution that they faced.
You had asked earlier about any eyewitnesses. And in the New Testament, as well as in several secular historical writings, they talk about there being 500 or more eyewitnesses to the resurrection of the dead, and in particular of Jesus. And so if you have even those who were enemies of the cross...
Okay, hold on. Before you go any further, where is the 500 recorded?
I know for sure in Josephus. I don't have...
It's certainly not in Josephus. I can tell you that. Okay. Absolutely, unmistakably not in Josephus. It's in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. 1 Corinthians 15, it says he appeared to the 500. Are right. any of those 500 listed?
No.
Do we know where he appeared to them? Do we know how long he appeared to them?
But if you have one eyewitness, is this enough to...
Do you know what would happen in a court of law if you had a second, third-hand report and you said, oh yeah, this appeared to 500 people and you couldn't corroborate it in any way? It would be tossed in a second.
Okay.
It would be tossed.
Well, at the same time, though, I mean, you're really making an argument from a negative to on the other aspect of life, because life, science has proven life cannot just spontaneously appear.
Well, I didn't say it spontaneously appeared.
Okay, so then where did life originate from?
Okay, realize this is a whole different question. We went from eyewitnesses to the origin of life.
I changed that.
Now, I agree that spontaneous generation has been disproved. What he means by spontaneous generation is they used to think that if you left like meat out or cheese out, life would like pop into existence, like mice would show up or rats or something like that. Obviously, we know that's not the case. So the question is, where did life come from? Interesting enough, a scientist by the name of Craig Venter, about 2 years ago, synthesized simple life forms in a lab, life from non-life. Now, that doesn't show us how it happened originally, but that tells us something very powerful, that the bridge between life and non-life is not this uncrossable bridge. It's a matter of having the right chemicals in the right temperature at the right time. Living matter emerges. So probably the most promising explanation for the origin of life is something called the RNA world hypothesis that most scientists embrace. I could give details if you want it, but I think it solves the problem, kind of the chicken and egg problem between protein and DNA, because RNA can catalyze itself.
But you still have to have that creator essence, correct?
We don't have to have a creator. No, why would you need a creator?
Well, who set up the lab for him?
That's why I said there's a difference. All the thing with Craig Venter can show is that if you have the right chemicals in the right order, then you get life. It doesn't show that intelligence is necessary in every circumstance to get it. It just breaks down the barrier and say, we certainly don't need a God to do it.
And the chemicals?
Look, the Miller-Urey experiment. Now, this is a separate question, though. I mean, each time I answer a question, you're punting to something else. The Miller-Urey experiment in 1953. They actually took took chemicals that on the early Earth. There was a certain temperature, zapped with electricity. They get a beaker at the bottom. They get amino acids, the building blocks of life.
Where did those chemicals
come
from?
Well, look, again, this is the barrier between life and between non-life, that you get the basic ones in one experiment. You're talking about a huge universe with a lot of probabilistic resources. Hang on, sir. You need to wait for the mic. Then you give him a chance. He wants to. I'm fine.
I have two things. First, a response to what you just said, and the second is a question that I'd like to know how your worldview can answer it. First, RNA is not the same as DNA, and RNA has zero life in it.
RNA has what is necessary to explain the origin of life, which is information.
It's a huge jump from RNA to DNA, though. A huge jump.
Well, it's...
The scientific community
different.
Even admits that.
RNA is different from DNA... But the core idea of there being information in a system, we see in RNA and it can catalyze itself. It's not a big jump, given how many resources there are, that DNA would come out of it. We see mutations taking place all the time on the biochemical level.
But mutations are at the DNA level.
They are at the, well, RNA, you can see it within RNA as well. You can see it within nature.
I still think it's a stretch. Anyway, the second thing is how does the atheist worldview account for the existence of evil? Or do you deny the existence of evil?
Oh, I think there's evil. I don't see any reason why the atheist worldview can't believe in evil. I think there's religious people who can do good. There's religious people who can do evil.
How do you
there's
measure it?
There's atheists that can do good. There's atheists that can do evil. We measure it in the same way.
Individually?
We measure it when individuals are unnecessarily harmed.
What if somebody else doesn't believe that?
Well, then that person is wrong.
How can you say that they're wrong over what you believe?
Well, first off, it's very easy to know because I can say they're wrong and you can say they're wrong as well. We look at the result of the behavior. We look at the society which is able to judge this behavior. I think Sam Harris in his book, The Moral Landscape, showed that science can actually tell us which behavior is productive and advantageous and good for us as a people and which is not.
Leaving it at that, you allow each person to define their own
I never
Absolute
said that.
Morals of good and evil.
I never said that. I'm not an individual relativist. I believe there's objective morality. I just don't see any reason why we need a God to ground morality whatsoever.
What do you base your objective morality on then?
I base my objective morality upon what science can show us is true. And again, Sam Harris has done this in The Moral Landscape. There's clearly, a simple explanation is, look, it's we are species that have empathy. It's a part of the way that we've evolved. And we can understand how certain behavior affects others, and we can understand how it in turn would affect us. It's the golden rule. Now, the golden rule was cited long before Jesus came along. Buddha said it 500 BC. We see it in Scientology. We see it in Hinduism. Almost every culture in the world recognizes this basic principle because it's a fact about life. It's the way that the world is.
Last question.
Sure.
So it's based upon how our actions make us feel, based on how they react to our actions? Is that what you base moral?
I don't remember saying that. In fact, I don't think I said that at all.
You said it's the observation of people's reaction to what we've done.
No, we can observe that certain behavior benefits human nature, gives us the right to life, gives us freedom, helps us to flourish as best as we can. I'm speaking in an Aristotelian kind of way, that there's a way that humans operate best. And we can observe the natural world and we can know that. So just like we look at communism, and communism has failed radically, and capitalism has radically worked much better, well, capitalism is good. And it's right for human beings to have that or some similar form of government, because humans operate best under those kind of systems. That's the way morality works, the same as that. It's not something made up. It's not dependent upon feelings. It's dependent upon objectively observing the universe and how it affects human belief.
Is your faith on faith in science based on faith or based on science itself? Or are you just do you know for a fact what happened, or are you just believing what someone else told you?
Well, over 90% of what we know is based upon authority. All of us, we have to concede that, right? You read it in a journal, read it in the newspaper, hear it from a teacher, hear it from a parent. So all of us are dependent upon authority. The question is, which authority do we trust? I don't trust a book from 2,000 years ago that's filled with contradictions, filled with mistakes, filled with errors, filled with immoral teaching that clearly a good God could not command, such as beating your slaves in Exodus 21, or, you know, women can't even speak in church, misogyny against women, or genocide, kill men, women, children, and infants. I can't hold up a book that teaches that and hold it any source of authority. But when I look in the scientific community, and scientists aren't infallible, scientists have made mistakes, but part of the way that science works is when mistakes are made, everybody else jumps around, corrects it, and then we move forward and get closer to truth. So science has a track record of revealing to us how the world operates, and it seems to me a much more trustworthy source to believe rather than an antiquated book with all the problems I mentioned before. Does that make sense? Did you want to follow up? Is this answering your question?
Well, in saying that, well, do you believe that your belief in science is better than my belief in Christ or the Bible?
What do you think?
Well, I'm asking you.
Of course I believe that, right? Of course I believe that my beliefs are rooted in truth, or I wouldn't believe them.
Okay.
If you could show me that Christ and the Bible was true, I would change and put my beliefs in there. So how do you know that book is true?
Well, how do you know your science is true?
Well, I think I've been answering that for the last hour.
Well...
Okay, look at what science has brought us.
Okay.
Okay, just think about it for a minute. Look at the technology that we have, transportation around the world, flight, right? Going to the moon. Look at dealing with sicknesses, understanding like microbiology and chemistry and how far we've come in that realm. Look what we've brought just in terms of information technology and entertainment. This is all brought on by science, right? Brought us, take us to the moon. I mean, science is telling us how the world works in a pretty powerful, accurate way. What has religion brought us? Wars, division, intolerance, homophobia, all these things come from belief in God. I mean, Christopher Hitchens is right. In his book, God is Not Great, he said religion poisons everything. That's what religion has brought us. I mean, look at the Middle East, right? They're killing each other all because of, you know, oh, the Jews say our holy book is true. Muslims say the Quran is true. Christians say the Bible's true. If we could just get rid of religion and say, look, science tells us how the world works. Can we get along? We'd have a much better world.
Can you see love?
Can I see love?
Yes.
Yes. No, I know where you're going with this. No, you can't see love. You can see acts of love. And by the way, I never said the only things you can believe are true are things that you can see. I believe events in the past are true, but we can't see them or reenact them. So I'm not a materialist, again, that only believes physical things are real. Does that make sense? But no, you can't see love, I don't think.
Can you explain the feeling of love? It has no shape or color.
Sure, it's easy. It's chemicals moving in your brain. You asked me to explain the feeling of love. Look, there are certain chemicals in the human body that give us certain feelings of affection and love. There's actually a chemical called oxytocin, and some have called it the love hormone. Some of you guys are thinking, where can I get some of this? Mm-hmm. I'm selling it afterwards. No, I'm just kidding. $9.99, I'll take two, he says. That's awesome. Are you a freshman? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just playing with you.
Actually, I have.
But by the way, let me clarify. There actually is a chemical in the human body that triggers feelings of love by this chemical being released in your body. It's called oxytocin. Look it up. So there's a chemical basis for feelings of love.
Actually, I have two questions. Is that fine? Or
we'll start with one and see how it goes, because we got some other questions.
Well, you do believe in like us evolving from apes and all that kind of stuff?
No, I don't believe in that.
Oh, okay, well then my other question is, our country was founded by
Christians, time on.
Though.
Okay, well, that's a whole separate question.
I know, but
the reason I don't accept your question is because I think you misstated what evolutionists believe. How many of you do not believe in Darwinian evolution? How many of you say, I don't believe in it? Let me see your hands. You reject it. Okay. Essentially, everybody. Okay, here's my question. And I may call on you. Put your hand up. If you can just simply define for me what Darwinian evolution is. What is it? Put your hand up if you can define it. Now, hang on. Don't go anywhere yet. Don't go anywhere yet. I want you to look around for a second. You have told me that essentially all of you reject Darwinian evolution, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I see a couple half hands could define it. All right. Now let me take my jacket off for a second. If I really was an atheist, what do you think I would be thinking right now? Honestly, what would I be thinking?
Brainwashed,
my man says. Uneducated, okay. Ignorant, she says. You guys spare no. You just speak truth here. I love it. Must be a Texas thing. I was born in Texas. Dallas, Richardson, baby. Yep. And the funny thing is, when I travel, sometimes like you wake up in the morning and forget where you are, but I always know when I'm in Texas, because it's only in Texas when the waffle machine is shaped like the state. They don't do that in like Rhode Island, because your waffle would be like this big. So here's the deal with evolution. I'll save the time and define it for you. I believe in Darwinian evolution, and I think the evidence is utterly overwhelming for this and compelling. And I could give you my specific reasons why. But we do not believe that we came from apes. We believe that apes and human beings shared a common ancestor in the past. Now, our ancestor with apes would be more close in the Darwinian tree than it would be with like squirrels or with whales or like jellyfish, right? But it doesn't mean we came specifically from apes, okay? It's an important distinction. We'll just take a couple more, and then we'll wrap up. All right, my man looks really excited up here. How about 1, 2, 3? These last three after you. Okay. Go ahead.
You believe in the Darwinian evolution where we all came from a common ancestor.
Yes.
How can you explain natural selection? Because when when genes mutate, we lose genetic information. So if we're mutating, we're constantly losing information instead of gaining it. So if we're from one thing, how can we be gaining information to be evolving into different things?
You know what? Sometimes we do lose information in genetic mutations. Sometimes mutations are neutral, and sometimes mutations are beneficial. We don't just lose information in certain mutations. So obviously, if information is lost, natural selection would weed it out. When information is gained and it gives a survival advantage, then that information is kept. That's the power of natural selection. So we see it working in the present. Obviously, evolution is over hundreds of millions of years, but even in the present, we see certain forms of bacteria changing and adapting to their environments and to certain drugs. Well, the only way to do that is by gaining information because of a genetic mutation. So we see those things operating in our own lifetime on a smaller scale. And if we look throughout the fossil record and other means, we have reason to believe that the same process happened over a long period of time. Go ahead, follow up.
The bacteria, the way they work is they have an enzyme in their body. So when they are introduced to an antibiotic, the enzyme in their body creates a poison, and that's what kills them. So the new bacteria that's isn't affected by the antibiotic, it's lost the information to be able to create that enzyme. So it's not really evolving, it's devolving.
But it's adapting, it gets stronger. And whether the enzyme is irrelevant to the function of the bacteria as a whole, there's been an adaptation in it that allows it to survive a foreign element that's coming in, and then those bacteria start to flourish, and that drug becomes essentially worthless. So we've seen that with certain STDs, with things like penicillin. We've seen it with HIV. There's certain strains of HIV, a virus now instead of just bacteria, that has resisted some of them, almost all forms of the drugs that we use. And how it does that varies. But we actually see organisms right in front of us in our own lifetime being able to creatively adapt to, you know, predators or threats from the environment and then survive and, you know, into future generations.
So are you saying that adaptation is the same as evolution, or are they different?
I never defined evolution. I think evolution, Darwinian evolution, is natural selection acting upon random mutation, and then we trace back to a common ancestor. And that obviously can't function if organisms are not adapting to their environment.
Okay.
So, good question. All right, we're going to go quick on these last ones. You guys have had your hands up, so we'll go right up here. Terry, you're killing it, man. Good work.
Whenever you date things, you say BC.
Date? I'm married. I don't date anymore.
Whenever you like use BC
and
AD.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
What do you mean by like BC or AD?
Actually, we use BCE, before the Common Era. Muslims dated differently. They would date from a time that Muhammad left and went north up to, not left Mecca, went to Medina. There's a different Chinese calendar. So I don't know if that has anything to do with Jesus actually existing, if that's what you're implying. Most historians will say BCE, before the Common Era. That's it. Which is around the time of the Roman Empire.
And then you believe in the Big Bang Theory, right?
Yes, I do. How many of you believe in the Big Bang? How many of you don't believe in the Big Bang? Let me see your hands. You don't believe in the Big Bang. Okay, all right, put your hands down.
Whenever you go and you blow up.
Hey, you know what? Because of time, I'm going to let these last two have their questions. You had yours. Good question, though. Okay?
Which one?
My man right here. And then there's one more somewhere back here. Last one.
A while back, you mentioned the Yuri Miller experiment. The top two, well, I think it's one of the top two biologists at Harvard University already denounced that and disproved that.
What's his name? Who are you talking about?
I forgot his name.
Okay, I'm not going to accept some random Googled name from Harvard who denounced that. It's still in modern textbooks. It doesn't solve all the problems about the origin of life, but it shows amino acids through the right chemicals through a natural process.
The hydrogen balance inside the premature Earth, the chemicals inside the atmosphere are not what they would be, based on current calculations, but that's a whole other discussion.
Do you have a question?
Yes. So I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget. Based on your...
I don't have to write things down. I have photographic memory.
That's a blessing.
I just don't have any film. Everyone under 20 can ask her youth pastor what that means. Like, film? What's film?
So based on your view of evolution, how would you explain this development of primordial soup and amino acids in the Miller-Urey Earth to the humans and the Earth that we have today? How would you explain that?
You're asking me in 30 seconds to explain the entire evolutionary process over probably 3.9 billion years in the history of Earth, right? You realize what you're asking me, right? I can't explain it in 30 seconds. I can point towards evidences that it's true. I can show the adaptive and creative capacity of natural selection. I can point to the fossil record, and we see slow increased development of the information that are in organisms that give them additional functions over time. We see phyla, and then we see mammals coming after that. I mean, if you look in the geological record, it tells a larger story, even though every single organism that ever lived hasn't been kept in the fossil record. I mean, most are not actually preserved. So I could point towards embryological development. I could point towards DNA similarities between humans and chimps. I can point towards missing links, like what's called Tiktaalik Rosae, where they found it exactly where they postulated between water, aquatic, and land animals. I mean, it's not just one 30-second answer. You point towards these multiple lines of evidence that tell us this evolutionary story throughout the history of Earth. That's the best I can do in 30 seconds, but...
Okay, there's... back to the right conditions. And... How long did it supposedly take to make the Rio Grande?
To make what?
The Rio Grande.
The Rio Grande?
Yes.
I have no idea.
Well, scientists say it took a long time because of a glacier. Or did it just happen with the right conditions?
I have no clue. I'll tell you what we know. We know that water can cause damage suddenly. And we know that slow trickle can cause the same equivalent damage over a long period of time.
But what I'm trying to say is, did it take a glacier to do all of that or a flood that covered the Earth?
I haven't studied the Rio Grande, so I would be out of my depth commenting on that. But I'd say there is some evidence for a big flood in the Middle East. There's no evidence for a worldwide flood at all. There's none. But there's other, I mean, what would that prove, right? There's plenty of other, there's, in the ancient Near East, there's 188 flood stories. So it wouldn't prove the Bible's true, it wouldn't prove Noah lived. It could be that there was a flood in the past and people tell these stories about it. I mean, it doesn't get you as far as I think you'd like it to get you. But good question. All right, I'm done. Woo! Man. That was kind of a muddled, nervous laughter on your part on that one. Now, let me ask you a few questions. How many of you right now are a little frustrated and confused? Let me see your hands. Okay. All right. Here's my question for you. On a scale of 1 to 10, I want you to rate yourself and I want you to write it down. I want you to write it down. You need to have notes out when we're done. We're going to debrief this for a minute. When we come back, I did not come all the way from California to entertain you for the day. You're going to write notes down and remember this stuff and learn it. It's that important. Here's what I want you to do. On a scale of 1 to 10, I want you to rate how well you did. 1, meaning that atheist destroyed me. 10, I owned that atheist in love, of course. Okay? And everywhere else, 5 would be average. Whether you asked a question or not, I want you to rate how well you were prepared to ask good questions, understand the issues, and engage someone with a different belief system. Okay? So write it down. Is it a 2? Is it a 5? Is it a 7? Okay? How well did you actually do? Write it down. All right? Now, how many of you would say, by a show of hands, at least five or under? Let me see your hands. Okay, all right, that's good. Sometimes people are like, man, I did an eight, and I'm thinking, what planet do you live on? Okay, good. You have a good sense of where you're at. Now, 1 Peter 3:15 says, sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts. Always be prepared to give an answer for those who ask. Do it with gentleness and do it with respect. You know, when Peter says always be prepared, you know who he's talking to? He's not talking to pastors. He's not talking to your parents. He's not just talking to me. Who's he talking to? All believers. Every single Christian is called to know what we believe and why we believe it. This is a part of being a Christian. Jesus said, love God with your heart, with your soul, and what? And with your minds. We are not called to be embarrassed about our faith. We're not called to have blind faith. We are called to follow the evidence where it leads. Do you know 1 Corinthians 15, Paul talks about the resurrection? He says, if Jesus hasn't been resurrected, then our faith is worthless. You realize what Paul is saying? He's saying our faith is not just made up and blind, and it's not equal to Muslims, and it's not equal to Mormons. It's not equal to an atheist. Our faith is actually true and reasonable and based upon the resurrection of Jesus 2,000 years ago. And there is good reason to think that that actually happened. So first thing I want to do is I intentionally wanted to beat up on you a little bit. That's part of my goal. Okay? Now instead, sometimes here's what happens. Sometimes I will do this and people get mad at me. And I say, don't shoot the messenger. I'm just showing the weakness that's in your faith as it is, and I'm bringing it up and showing it to you. And I actually do it because I care about you, and you think that's crazy. It's true. Let me tell you something. I get tired of seeing too many students go through church their whole lives, go through a Christian home, go through youth group, get to a university, and then have a professor who is like me starts picking apart their faith, and they don't know how to give an answer. So what happens? All the temptations around them on the college campus start looking a lot more appealing if they can accept that there's problems in the Bible or that God doesn't exist. Those temptations look more powerful, and many of them cave and they give in. I wanted to challenge you now while you're younger and you still have time to start taking your faith seriously and start asking deeper questions and finding out what is true for yourself. Look, I've been wearing this jacket. We went longer than I normally go, for almost an hour. And I hope you realize, I basically don't believe anything I just said to you for the past hour. You know that, right? Does everybody get that? And my answer for you is not, boy, those were really good objections I raised an atheist. I can't answer them, but I have faith. That's not my answer. I'm a Christian because I think it's true. Did everybody hear that? I think the Bible is actually true. I don't think there's contradictions in this Bible. I think there's some on the surface, they look like they contradict, but when you go to the language, when you go to the culture, when you go to the context, you realize there's a good explanation. I don't think there's mistakes in this book. I think God actually spoke through this, and I have good reason to back that up. I don't believe in Darwinian evolution. I don't think it's possible that a random, unguided process could explain everything we see in nature. And you were on the right track, kind of saying, wait a minute. Now, I was pushing back and using big words, right? But you're asking a good question. How can a blind random process explain bumblebees? I mean, really? Do you know hummingbirds, their wings can flap up to like 50 times a second? I mean, something ridiculous. How does a random process result in that? No way. No chance. Okay, so I don't believe the stuff I've been saying. Now, some of you asked some good questions. You asked about moral conscience, and some of you asked about morality. Now, I don't think I gave a good explanation for that. I don't think you can have objective morality without God. Some of you asked about the origin of the universe. By the way, I actually believe in the Big Bang. I just know who banged it. You can't get a Big Bang without a big banger. I mean, honestly, just think about this for a second. Of all ancient religious books, please hear me. There's one ancient book I've ever found that says the universe began to exist. All the other ancient books say the universe is eternal. And that one ancient book is Genesis. It says, in the beginning. And then in the past century, with Einstein's finds and the Hubble telescope and others, all of a sudden scientists who used to think the universe was eternal and didn't have a beginning are saying, wait a minute, the universe seemed to bang into existence. Now, if it banged into existence, there had to be a banger or something outside of the universe to bring it into existence. Now, you might have been hinting at this, but if we're standing here, all of a sudden there's a huge explosion, and you look at me and you go, Sean, what was that? And I say, I know what caused that. That was caused by nothing. Would you find that compelling? You'd think that dude has lost his rocker. That's crazy. Despite what I said earlier, you can't get something from nothing. It doesn't work that way. Do you know what many scientists to say something can come from nothing, you know what they do? They redefine what nothing is. In the real world, nothing means nothing. No thing. In science, sometimes it's an empty space where there's a vacuum which has particles. That's not nothing. I want to know where those particles came from. Okay? So there's an old joke where some scientists come to God and they say, hey God, we can do everything you can do. God says, like what? And they say, we can create life from non-life. God says, really? Show me. So they pick up some dust and God says, get your own dust. Where'd the dust come from? Stars. Where'd the stars come from? Quantum fluctuations. Where'd the quantum fluctuations come from? Now, I threw something at you. I said, well, if you say God created the world, then what are you left with a problem of? Who created God? Who made God? Now, follow with me for a second. You can only ask, this is what's called a category fallacy. You know what a category fallacy is? It's applying one category to an area it doesn't belong. So if I said to you, or if I asked you a question, how much does the color purple weigh? Actually, wait, I got another question. What does the musical note C smell like? You're chuckling, why? Because color and weight are different categories. Smell and sound are different categories. It's a fallacy to apply one category to the other. Now, when it comes to the origin of the universe, when we say who created God, that's a category fallacy. Why? Because, or who made God? Because you can only ask what made something of things that can be made. Do you understand that? You can only ask what made something of things that can be made. So you can ask what made your shoes, what made that pen, who made this building, but it makes no sense to say, well, who made the number four? Because numbers exist necessarily in themselves. If you ask who made God, that's an illogical question because you're really saying who made the unmakeable eternal creator of the universe? You see how absurd this is? So you can only ask what caused something of things that can what? Things that can be caused. So if you ask what caused God, you're actually saying what caused the uncaused, self-existent, eternal creator of the universe, which is nonsense. Okay? What am I doing? We're not going to work, maybe in the question and answer time towards the end, we'll work through some of the other questions that came up. But I'm trying to show you that somebody can put a jacket on and they can make the atheist worldview or any worldview sound compelling and reasonable and rock you in your faith if you're not prepared. And if some of you don't take seriously loving God with your minds, then your faith is in jeopardy. And if you don't start taking it seriously now, it's going to be too late when you get older. That's my whole message this weekend. Look, I want you to think of great movies. And by great movies, I mean movies like The Original Karate Kid. Great movies. Do you know what Mr. Miyagi had to do before Daniel-san could learn? Daniel-san thought he was great. He had to break him down where Daniel-san realized, okay, I don't know what I'm doing. I will listen to you, Mr. Miyagi. And then he was in a position to learn, right? That happened to happen with Luke Skywalker. It has to happen in almost every great movie. The hero, like, think of Thor. He's rash. He doesn't listen to anybody. He had to get humbled, sent down to earth, and then he goes, okay, now I can learn. That's the classic story of the hero. Part of my job this morning was to humble you a little bit, to rock your world some, and hope that a fire will just burn a little bit and go, I need to take seriously why I believe what I believe and start asking questions. Now, let me ask you one more thing before we take a break. How do you think you treated me as Mr. Atheist? How do you think you treated me? If I was an atheist, came in, do I think, boy, these people are loving, they're patient, they're thoughtful. Would I be thinking that? Condemning, somebody said. That's pretty strong. Did you say that? Why do you say that? Did you hear what she said? How many of you say she's right? I agree with her. Okay, I want you to listen very, very carefully for the next 10 minutes, and then we're going to take a break, okay? Because this is some of the most important stuff we're going to talk about all day. I do this a lot. And you guys, I think you're right in your approach, but you are milder than probably most groups I've had. I was speaking a couple, maybe 3 or 4 summers ago now, and it was actually at a stadium in Minnesota, and there were 6,000 students, and I set up microphones around the stadium and did my atheist role play. And I wore a hat instead of a shirt, and I turned around and put the hat on to be Mr. Atheist, and a group of students booed. They're like, boo, boo. And I stopped, and I was shocked. I thought, whoa. I thought, why are you booing me? I said, do you think Jesus would boo someone of a different belief system who came to speak to their group? Do you see Jesus doing this? Jesus said to love your enemies, not to boo them. In fact, even Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13 and 14, when he's talking about the spiritual gifts and love, he says, if you speak in tongues but have not love, you're like a clanging cymbal. If you give words of prophecy but have not love, you have nothing. I laid into these students and it was silent in that room, which proves there was a God because there were junior hires present. Well, the summer after that, I was speaking in Salt Lake City, Utah, and maybe 500-600 students. And I turned around, I had a hat or jacket on, and I was an atheist, and all of a sudden these group of students, they're like, "Woo, we're glad you're here," and that kind of caught me by surprise. Usually people don't clap when I'm the atheist. So afterwards I asked them, I said, "Why were you guys clapping for me?" And they said, "Well, we were the ones who booed you in Minnesota." But you know what I realized? They got the point. They got the point. I was speaking at a camp in Houston. And I don't know, maybe 500-600 students. And they asked me to do my atheist role play. I get asked to do this a lot, which is interesting. It's kind of fun. I'm not going to lie. I do have fun. Someone said, "Oh, I have fun working today." I said, "I don't look at this as work. This is fun." And I was doing my atheist role play. And these students, you guys asked some good questions about the origin of life, the origin of the universe, about eyewitness accounts. I mean, I shot it down, but you're on the right track of asking eyewitness accounts. You were asked about the origin of the universe, moral conscience. I mean, this group kind of had nothing. They were fundamentalists. The Bible says it, believe it, that settles it. And they were getting really frustrated. I could just sense it in the room. And this girl, kind of my back left, maybe about where you are, she stands up and she says, "I'm going to read you something from the Bible." I said, "You know, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in the Bible." She says, "I don't care. Listen up." She reads Psalm 14:1, which says, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God." I said, "So you in front of everybody, you're publicly calling me your guest a fool." She said, "That's right. You're a fool." Sits down and everyone claps for her. Well, that night, the session was over. And this girl waited till everybody was gone. I think she was a junior, so she was maybe 17 years old. And she said, you know, kind of quietly, like, "Can we talk?" And I knew it was something serious. I said, "Sure." I said, "It's got to be somewhere public, but, you know, we sat on a bench and people around, but just the two of us could hear the conversation." And she said, "I want to thank you for, you know, trying to rationally and reasonably defend the atheist worldview." I said, "Well, sure. Why are you thanking me?" She said, because I'm an atheist. I said, really? And you're at a Christian camp? That's great. Why are you an atheist? She said, well, not too long ago, I started having some doubts and having some questions. And I went to my youth pastor, and he said, you shouldn't ask those questions. That's sin. You know, what's wrong with your life? I went to my pastor. He shot him down. She said, I couldn't find answers to real questions, to tough questions that I have. And I realized just recently that I'm an atheist, even though I'm still a leader in my youth group. I said, have you told anybody? She said, no. I said, well, why not? She said, because I'm afraid they will treat me exactly like they treated you tonight. If there was an atheist sitting here, and maybe there is, time and time again, they like slip in or a friend comes or they're undercover or something. Last week I was speaking and there was a couple atheists that were there. What do you think their perception of Christians would be? And you don't have to answer out loud, I just want you to think. Would their perception be, man, Christians are thoughtful? Christians really care about people who don't believe. They're in this and they believe that story. Would that be their perception? Or would it be different? I wrote a book which I have in the back. I'll show you this because it involves a story I want to share. And the book is called, Is God Just a Human Invention? Basically, everything I've been throwing at you for the past hour comes from this group called the New Atheists. And I wrote a book a couple years ago with a friend of mine to respond to some of these objections. So if you're sitting there going, boy, I'm in for today, but I need to go a little deeper and think about this, this is one you would maybe want to get. Well, when I wrote this, mainly Christians were reading it, and I wanted skeptics to read it. So I called up the like Skeptic Society of Orange County, the Free Thinkers. And I said, hey, my name's Sean McDowell. I wrote this book. I'd be happy to bring free copies to your whole group and sit on the hot seat for a couple hours at your meetings, and you can just ask me whatever you want to. I said, I don't have all the answers. I'm not going to pretend I do, but maybe we can at least, instead of shooting bombs at each other and calling names, maybe we can build some common ground and be on the same page here. Well, he said yes, so I go for 2 hours to this home, and my wife is there. And my pastor came. And for 2 hours I'm sitting there, there's about 20 people from a college student to a woman who's in her, I don't know, 70s or 80s. And they were asking me questions about the origin of the soul, about the character of God, about politics, about abortion, all these kind of questions. And at the end I said, do you mind if I ask you some questions? And I brought some prepared ones. Instead of asking them about the origin of life and how can you get information from non-information, as good of a question as that is. Instead of saying, well, how can you get something from nothing? Where did the universe come from? As critical of a question as that is. Or how do you explain the eyewitness evidence for Jesus? Which, again, is a good question. I said, I have a different question for you. I said, I want to know, what can Christians do better to effectively reach out to skeptics and share what we really believe is true? And instantly, a lady who was sitting in the back, she said, listen. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, all my Christian friends want to preach the gospel at me. They want to tell me what I'm supposed to believe, but they don't want to have a conversation, and they don't want to actually listen to what I believe and why. That tells me they don't really care. Ooh. Another guy spoke up who said he used to be a Christian, and he said, you know, he said, stop the atheist jokes. I said, really? Because I've got some good ones. Come on, man. I said, well, what do you mean? He grew up in the church. He's left his faith and he started a ministry, actually something against Jesus. I don't know. He's an outspoken skeptic now. He said occasionally he'll sneak in the back of a church and just sit in and listen. Doesn't tell anybody who he is. Doesn't say why he believes that. He just watches. He says almost every time I'm there, there's some shot or some joke about non-believers, and many times it's against atheists. I remember sitting there going, it can't be that bad. I mean, this guy's got a complex. I'm telling you, within a few weeks, my wife and I were in church, and the pastor tells a joke at the expense of atheists. And my leg still hurts, because my wife was like, started squeezing my knee, and she's like, look. She goes, that guy was right. I don't think we even realize how much the message that we send to other people who aren't Christians, they're the enemies, they're not welcome, they're foolish, And I know there's some powerful scriptural truth about this, but there's also a powerful precedent about how we are to communicate and love people who don't believe. If you're here today and you're just thinking, man, I have questions, I want answers, because I've got this pesky atheist at school and I want to prove them wrong, then at the break, can you just leave? I'd rather have two of you stay who say, I really want to learn what I believe and why, and I want to be able to lovingly defend my faith. I'd rather be with two students who really think that way and care than 150 who are just kind of here because they want answers to disprove their friends and show them that they're wrong. So I take my students on trips, actually. Some of my high school students. We just went to Salt Lake City 2 weeks ago. And it's kind of fun to split up my students in groups of two and spread them out to knock on doors and say, hey, we're Christian missionaries. Can you talk about Jesus? In Salt Lake City, right? Because they're all Mormons and they've done that to us. We've gone into inner city LA where there's more Muslims than any other city in America. And we also, I got tired of seeing my students train them and then they go to the university. And there's 2 to 3 times as many atheists and agnostics in the university than the public as a whole. And have a professor like what I did. I've had students come back and tell me that they have professors exactly like I role play, go after their faith, attack them. Then there's other professors who are a little bit more subtle and just dismiss Christianity as obviously being false. I got tired of seeing them do that. So I thought with one of my friends, we need to take our students, high school students, the most godless, secular place we can think of, bring in atheists and agnostics, allow them to speak like this to my students, but train my students well enough that they can ask good questions and defend their faith. So the past few years, I've been taking students on trips to Berkeley. And you know what I tell my students? I say, what's our goal here? When we bring in these speakers, is our goal to convert them? And I say, if God wants to do that, praise the Lord. Our goal above all else is to show Christ's love to that person who's made in the image of God. I said, this atheist up here doesn't believe in God, but guess what? He's still made in the image of a God who loves him and who cares about him and offers forgiveness if he will accept it. Now, don't get me wrong. Paul says love speaks truth. The most loving thing we can do sometimes is speak the truth. I think Christians right now are getting bullied to buy the line that homosexuality is born a certain way, marriage is natural, and you're hateful and bigoted if you don't accept same-sex marriage. I'll tell you this, I will not cave. Amen. I'm about to write a book with a friend of mine on this, and to be honest with you, it scares me to death because I'm probably going to get persecuted and attacked in a way that I don't like. I actually have thin skin besides what you might think being up here. But there's not a lot of people lovingly speaking truth today. And I'm willing to put myself on the line for it. And I might regret it down the road, but I'm going to know I stood up for truth. We need young people to stand up, speak truth out of a heart of love. Let me tell you one last story and then we'll end. Look, when I spent that day with the skeptics, the next day I got an email from an atheist college student. And the subject line was, kindred spirit. You know what he wrote? He grew up in a Christian home. His mom died when he was young. His dad died when he was young. Yes, he's angry at God. He's one of the sharpest philosophers I know. A lot smarter than me, at least when I was 20 years old, like he is now, or 25. And you know what? He wrote in the letter, he said, I want to thank you for coming to our group, being willing to sit in the line of fire, be thoughtful about your belief system, not be defensive, admit when you didn't know something, and just build relationships with us. Well, for the past 2 or 3 years, I've been mentoring an atheist college student. 2 weeks ago, he came over to my house for dinner. We didn't debate philosophy. We actually spent a lot of time talking about Superman and the new movie. Why do I tell you this? Because you know what? We live in a world right now that is becoming less and less Christian. The other side is getting emboldened. The other side will not stop anywhere until you bow down to secular ideas and say that you believe the Bible is false. And I think many of you are going to face persecution in your lifetime because of this. I hope not, but I think it's coming for Christians in America. The time to decide where you stand is not when you're in college or out of college. It's now. You know why Daniel was so strong in Babylon even when they persecuted him? It said Daniel determined in his heart not to defile himself. You know what tense determined is? I know it's summer, but it's what? What tense is it? It's past. Daniel had already determined he would not defile himself, he would not walk away from God, and he was going to follow what is true. And Daniel knew it. So my goal the rest of the day, and it's going to go by fast, and I hope you will bring notes. I hope you will sit towards the front and you will listen. If there's something you don't understand, I want your hand to shoot up and I want you to ask a question. I can't answer all the questions today, but I'm going to do my best. And I'm going to try to build up your faith a little bit and get you on the ground knowing, boy, this is really true. And I know why it's true. Amen? Now listen, let me show you, and I'll point to these throughout the rest of the weekend. Is God just human invention? One of my favorite books written in particular for young people. All the questions I throw out at you. In fact, the first one is faith blind? I can't remember which you're talking about. Can you please read this chapter? We're going to talk about this coming up next, but it'll show you why your faith is very different than a Muslim or a Mormon or an atheist faith, and we can know that it's true. About the origin of life, there's a chapter on that. The origin of the universe, eyewitness accounts. What about hell? What about evil? What about the Old Testament things? I said there's genocide and slavery, all that stuff we go through. And there's 17 questions we go into depth. Now, another one back there is something called the Apologetic Study Bible for Students. I put this together. I was the general editor. We got the 120 top questions that students ask. All sorts about science, about the Bible. Almost every single thing that came up today I threw at you, there's an answer to it. Now, the difference is that book has 17 questions in a little more depth, like 10, 12 pages. These are one-page quick answers. And then throughout the whole book, you have these little cool things like little tactics explaining something. And there's what's the big deal with gambling? That's a good question. There's footnotes at the bottom with tough questions. There's introductions to the Bible books. It's an easy-to-use translation. And it's got my favorite question in here, which is, if God made everything, then why is it wrong to smoke pot? That's a good question. Why is Jesus unique right there? You flip the page over. Why do we need, forgiveness? All these kind of really tough questions are in that one. And the last one I'll say is a book called More Than a Carpenter. They're all discounted down back there. This one's only $5. My dad wrote this book. He grew up in a messed up family background. In fact, my dad's dad, my grandpa, was the town drunk in a town in Michigan. My dad never knew his father sober until he was in his 20s. My dad was also sexually abused for 7 years by a man on the farm where they worked. Until when my dad was 13, he grabbed the man by the neck, slammed him against the wall and said, "If you touch me again, I will kill you." And he meant it. And what my dad did is, growing up, his older sister committed suicide. He came home one day and saw his mom lying in the cow manure covered in blood because his dad had taken a belt and beaten his mom within an inch of her life. My dad hated God growing up. In fact, I'll be honest with you, I'm 37. I didn't know how tough my dad's life was until about 2 years ago. I was sitting around with my sisters and my nieces, and my mom's telling funny stories about when she was a kid. My sister Heather goes, "Hey, Dad, tell us a funny memory you have when you were a kid." Ugh, I just get emotional thinking about it, like awkward silence. And my dad says, "I don't have one." Well, my dad had a full scholarship to law school, and he set out to write a book disproving Christianity, showing that it was false. He traveled around the world gathering the evidence to show Christianity was false. Well, obviously, he came to a very different conclusion and has spent his life now writing books, debating, speaking, showing. And he wrote the simple book, More Than a Carpenter. You can read it in 2 hours, how we know the Bible's actually true. And the answer is not just because we have faith. There's good evidence the Bible's true, and we're going to look at that. Second, how do we know Jesus rose from the grave? The answer is not blind faith. There's good historical evidence. And how do we know Jesus is God? If I had the money, I'd give you all this for free, but then you might not read it. A Starbucks coffee is basically what it costs. I wish every one of you would read this and underline it and study and talk about it. It would transform your faith. And that's as close to a guarantee as I can get. All right? We are 10 minutes over, but you said there's a little flexibility in there, right? So we're going to take a little break, then we're going to come back. And before lunch, we're going to talk about the question that came up. Is faith blind? Do we just believe this blindly, or is faith based on evidence? And I think the answer is going to surprise you. So bring your notes back. Be ready to go.